Welcome one and all to episode 96 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, we got together on Saturday and did about 16 beers worth of scouting, and it went well. I felt like we saw some things, we watched some things. We got some takes to get off, but overall, it was a good weekend. How are you doing though?
I'm doing great, it really was. We broke down a lot of, you know, when we get together in person, it's always different from, because we talk every week, and we talk via text all the time, but it's always more interesting getting together in person and hashing these things out because we really get to see firsthand what each other sees and break it down. And this was an instance where we had to break down. I actually watched UCLA Memphis before we met up, and then we watched Ohio State Army. We watched some Oregon Wyoming. We watched some Louisville Clemson, Mississippi State LSU. So we have a lot of takes. You know, I think we were really getting down to the nitty-gritty. It's always fun to get together. You know, I've spent entire days with you scouting like this. I've done that with Emery Hunt and with Jeff Risden as well. And it's always fortunate for me to get to do that and get to pick other people's brains. And so that was a lot of fun. And fortunately, you're living here in Chicago right now, so we got a chance to do that. But as usual, we're going to start with quarterbacks tonight, but we've got a lot of other takes coming down through the pike too, and then a couple really hot takes.
Yeah, and of course, we're going to start out with everybody's quarterback one once again. Sam Darnold leads his team back from the brink of an upset, gets into overtime, and makes some dime throws. You know, it was the full Darnold experience for me, and you know, he's a good ball player, but he's a high variance quarterback. He's not a guy that is going to be putting up 30 touchdowns to 7 interceptions or, you know, Aaron Rodgers type numbers. He's more of on that, like Jay Cutler scale to me, where he's kind of a, like, you know, F it, let's throw this type pass. And I'm okay with that. Like, I like quarterbacks like that. Like, that's, you know, my style. I enjoy watching them play, and he's a very good quarterback. But these guys that are insistent that he's kind of this can't miss surefire thing, I just want to understand why we're okay with the interceptions to get to the point where he had to make the miraculous comeback against a bad Texas team.
Yeah, Darnold's kind of like, oh man, he's kind of like the anti Josh Allen, if we're comparing guys in this class, in that he throws the interceptions, but then he comes through in the clutch rather than throwing the interceptions in those clutch situations. So it's and I guess we could lump Rosen in here too, because Rosen throws some really bad interceptions that puts him in a hole and then has to, like, dig himself out of that hole. So Darnold's been throwing picks. He's thrown 6 to 7 to 7 touchdowns to this point in the season. And through 3 games, that's a lot. And it seems like not a lot of people are talking about that. But he was able to come through in big-time clutch situation. It's interesting, because there's so much about Sam Darnold that scouts shouldn't like. The turnovers, the 6 picks, the limited starting experience, the elongated windup. And I think that telegraphs some of his throws. And then he's got a really talented supporting cast around him because he goes to USC. So there's a lot of highly touted recruits around him at receiver, at running back. Ronald Jones, the second, is a guy who's having a fantastic year and who had a 56-yard touchdown catch. And then they have the freshman Carr, who's been outstanding. They've got Burnett, the receiver, who's been outstanding. So this guy has, like, a great supporting cast. but he's pulling out the wins that he's supposed to pull out. And they beat Stanford. They beat Texas, which looks like a tough defense right now. At least in this game it did. I don't know, like, what the track record is. But yeah, Darnold, to me, is a little bit mysterious because he has, like, a delivery of Tebow, of a right-handed Tebow, or like a Kevin Hogan. But we've also seen that in small glimpses that Kevin Hogan seems to be at least a playable NFL quarterback. So I don't know what to really make of Darnold, but other than to say he does not look like your prototypical top five draft pick at this point. I think he doesn't have great arm strength. And again, that windup telegraphs some throws, and that'll lead to turnovers. And then you factor in, a lot of people like to look at a guy like Josh Allen and say, oh, his supporting cast is terrible, and that's why his performance has been bad. And then they look at a guy like Darnold, where they'll say, look at that play, without acknowledging that his supporting cast is a bunch of highly touted 4- and 5-star recruits. So I think there's somewhat of a disconnect there between how people are evaluating these guys. But all in all, I think Darnold he's at least a passable NFL prospect, but I'm not sure I see first round guy with him. And to be totally fair to him, redshirt sophomore, by some accounts, I think Adam Schefter or Ian Rapoport's reported this, he's leaning toward staying at USC next year, which I think would be the smart move.
I'm with you. I would stay if I was him. Like, he's got some talent, and so develop that talent. The USC system looks to be favorable to him. He's probably going to lose Ronald Jones, as you talked about, the extremely talented running back, but it could benefit him one more year. On the other end of the spectrum, Josh Allen, I don't want to say put a fork in him, but I think we are seeing the realization that this guy has been a late day two, early day three type prospect. And so the first quarterback taken conversation, I don't know if that was from sources or if that was just something that was being touted online. Like, I'm not sure where that was coming from. Your and my opinion has always been, if you're going to be a guy and people are telling you you're a top 5 pick, whatever, hell, if you're a top 32 pick, come out, like, get drafted, get the money, because you never know what's going to happen in your career. I just have a hard time believing that there's this much of a quote unquote fall for a guy that was supposed to be a top 3 pick. And now it doesn't even look like a legitimate prospect. It reminds me a lot of the Matt Barkley situation where, if Barkley would have come out, he would have competed with Andrew Luck to be the top pick. And then the next year he goes in round 4. It's like, that's what the NFL always thought of him. The reason guys don't come out is not because they get, oh, you're going to be a top 5 pick, you should come out. No, I want to be the first overall pick, I'm going to go back and earn that. That's virtually unheard of. So that's why I always had a disconnect with this whole thing.
I don't want to beat on the guy because he's had a rough start to the season, but Josh Allen, as you know, as a player, I've never been high on. I've never understood the hype on this kid, and I think it's been a disservice to him that he got hyped to begin with, because this is a player who was not recruited out of high school. He was barely recruited out of junior college, where, to rehash something we've talked about in the past, he had a below 50% completion percentage out of junior college before going to Wyoming. Then he injured himself, he became injured 2 years ago in 2015 and missed most of the season with that injury. And then 2016 was his first year as a starter, where he posted pretty average numbers. So the argument for him becomes a supporting cast argument. And then this year he's been a complete disaster in any game that he's played against a Power 5 opponent, which is two of the first three. He's played against Iowa. He's played against Oregon. And he's played against Gardner-Webb. Against Gardner-Webb, he was fantastic in terms of statistics. Against the other two opponents, it's been a complete whitewash. And there's really no justification at this point to put him in the conversation for top quarterbacks. So if he were to declare at this stage, to me, he's not much different than Brandon Bridge, a player we talked about a few weeks ago, where the narrative on him was tools, tools, tools. He has great NFL tools. He has a great arm and he has mobility. But every time we saw this guy play, he didn't get the job done. So Allen has a couple things that he has to get done. He's got to play at the highest possible level throughout the Mountain West Conference schedule that he's about to embark on. And because then you can make the supporting cast argument. Those athletes are presumably on an even playing field at that point. If he is not impeccable throughout that Mountain West Conference schedule, then he's got to start considering coming back next year, because that the coming back for the senior year, that is what helped, say, a Derek Carr become a second-round pick. Now, Carr was a more highly touted recruit, but again, he didn't get a ton of offers coming out of high school either. That's what kind of vaults Carson Wentz into the conversation for a first-round pick. Both those guys were seniors. Allen, a redshirt junior, still with that year of eligibility, as we talked about before, only 21 years old right now. So he does not have to make the jump right now. Right now, if he had to make the jump, he isn't going to be a first-round pick. He might be a second-round pick, because we've seen crazy stuff happen, like Christian Hackenberg going the second round. But we've got guys like our buddy Jeff Risden saying he's not even Josh Allen's not even a draft prospect right now. So I'm not sure I would go that far, because I acknowledge that he has a great arm and that he has great mobility for his size, and that he doesn't have a great supporting cast. But the proof is in the pudding as far as when he goes against Power 5 competition or better level competition. He's making poor decisions. He's forcing throws. He's not playing good situational football, and I think that's a key. Good situational football at a college level is kind of a key for what makes me think a guy is a decent prospect at the next level. I love all the physical tools and all that stuff, but there's got to be some good situational football being played too to kind of mesh with that. And at this point, he doesn't have it. So I don't want to say Josh Allen's done. What's funny is looking at people who won't, like, who were all in and now who are either all out or they're just, like, slowly backing away from it. And it's like, why were you all in to begin with? And this brings me to a point that I made on Twitter earlier on Wednesday. And I said, there used to be some etiquette here. If a player was a junior or a redshirt sophomore, you didn't discuss him as a draft prospect until either he declared or you were reasonably sure that he was going to declare. That never happened with Allen, and he got catapulted into that discussion. And I think that gets into guys' heads, and I think it does them a disservice. So I don't like that about this whole thing. And every time I talk about him, it feels like I'm beating up on him. And I'm really kind of beating up on the people who vaulted him into that conversation in the first place.
When I was listening to you describe, you know, who he was as a prospect and what you've seen from him, the remarks reminded me of Logan Thomas. And you'll remember similar type things for Logan Thomas when he was that, I believe when he was a redshirt sophomore as well.
That's a great call. And you're absolutely right. He was another player being discussed as a potential number one overall pick coming out of his redshirt sophomore year. Absolutely great call.
And so we saw he got drafted by the Arizona Cardinals because of tools. He floated around the NFL for a little bit as a quarterback, and now he's, I believe, with the Detroit Lions as a Buffalo Bills as a tight end. So
right,
you know, it's one of those situations where maybe it's time for Josh Allen to suit up and go move down to tight. No, I'm just kidding. But when you look at it overall, yeah, it doesn't do a disservice to these kids to hype them up, because then the crash is so far and so long. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that that's where we're at in terms of everything.
Well, if you think of it this way, Seth, if you don't hype the guy like that, if you just say, like, look, this is a guy to keep your eye on, that can be an encouraging thing. If you say this guy's a top five pick, that can be a lot of pressure on him. And in a way, I think this is kind of good for Allen, because now the pressure, in a way, the pressure's off, because I don't think anybody anymore expects this guy to be a top five pick. Now it's like, is he going to be a draft prospect? Is he going to come back and play college ball in 2018? So now he can just play ball with the Mountain West in a conference where he did pretty well against that competition, save a couple so-so performances against San Diego State, who obviously can play with the big boys, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in a way, I think the pressure is off him now, and he can start focusing on just playing better and playing up to, or at least playing up to his potential with the guys that he has around him as best he can. But I love the Logan Thomas example, because I think that hits the nail on the head. And he didn't come out as a redshirt sophomore, obviously. He came back and played two more years, if I'm not mistaken. So that would be a perfect parallel to Allen if he comes back and plays soon. I don't think Allen's going to end up being a tight end, but Logan Thomas didn't come into the NFL as a tight end either. So we'll see about this. I don't want to put the nail in this guy's coffin, but it's just, to me, it's just like, I think at this point forward, we can kind of stop talking about this guy as a 2018 prospect until he declares, because I think the book's out on him against top competition.
The guy that we're now going to see, and we've talked about him, I mean, we previewed him, and now we've talked about him last couple shows, Nick Fitzgerald out of Mississippi State, put on a clinic against LSU, and right-handed Tim Tebow is alive and well. Now, here's what I'll say. He has got a bazooka for an arm. He just has no idea how to use it. And he doesn't have the same, like, wonky wind-up that Tebow had. He, you know, it's not like elongated, and it doesn't look odd, but
that's Darnold.
He just doesn't look like he knows how to throw the football right now. And that's unfortunate for him, because physically the guy is an extremely talented looking quarterback right now.
Right. I mean, he just led his team, I should say, to a blowout win over LSU, 30 points. We weren't expecting this. This is a game you and I watched together. We were not expecting this kind of blowout performance. But what we saw out of Nick Fitzgerald in that offense, it didn't scream NFL quarterback. It didn't scream first-round prospect. I'll be frank here. I think that the Nick Fitzgerald elevation is coinciding with the Josh Allen declination. And this guy, Fitzgerald, for analysts, is filling the void left open by Allen. I don't think this is a legitimate call to say that this player is a potential first-round pick. I think this is a long way away. And I think Fitzgerald is interesting. I want to watch more of him. But I didn't see anything out of him as a thrower, as a pass, as Greg Cosell would say, as a thrower of the football. I don't see what people are talking about when they're elevating this player. And this isn't a knock on Nick Fitzgerald, who, as we have talked about a few times now, came from the wing T a couple years ago. He is still a raw quarterback as far as passing. And he's getting better. I think that I can safely say that. But let's cool our jets on this guy here. This is not an NFL type of – this isn't an NFL type of offense that he's winning with. He rushed for 111 yards or something like that and two touchdowns. He He's throwing the ball like 15 times, 15 to 20 times a game. This, let's cool our jets.
Well, and he is doing the one thing that we ask, and we ask this, you know, obviously we don't actually ask anything, but the thing we want to see out of prospects.
He's getting better.
Is an improvement. Right. And so for me, he's the perfect candidate to be that senior quarterback that goes in the at number one in the 2019 draft. If he continues on this trajectory, I mean, we're still talking about a guy that's barely clipping 61% completion percentage, and he's only thrown 70 passes. He's not throwing the ball down the field. He's not, you know, pushing the ball vertically. But he's improving. He's up from 54.3 in 2016 to now in 2017, you know, just over 61%.
Through three games.
And that's what, so the growth is on its way. He's on pace to throw, you know, for a career high in touchdowns. He's, you know, on his way to 26 or 28, depending on how many games they play this year. And he's on pace to score another, I believe it's right around 20 on the ground. I mean, he's a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate more than he is a first round draft pick candidate in my book.
One thing that Seth and I talked about was his athleticism as a runner, because the high school testing that we have on him doesn't do that justice, I don't think. And he looks a lot more athletic now than what you would think if you looked at his Nike Spark Camp scores coming out of high school. But that being said, you have to wonder if this guy is, you know, I don't want to play the race game here, Seth, but we talked about this. If this guy's a different color, people are talking about Lamar Jackson moving to receiver, but they're not talking about Nick Fitzgerald moving to tight end.
I mean, other than on this show, because
right, which we have talked about. But and to be fair, people did talk about that with Tebow, that he would need to move to fullback or tight end. So this is not purely a black or white thing, but this is a situation where all of a sudden, you know, I raise an eyebrow. Like, all of a sudden this guy is getting hype a couple weeks ago, started with, as far as I know, with Tony Pauline and his sources, and it's just kind of escalated from there. But we were watching this and saying, okay, so why is this a surefire quarterback prospect and not a tight end conversion prospect?
And right.
I'm not there yet with him as far as a passer. I just don't see that when we look at these other guys as passers, and I'm talking about the other, you know, 5-6 guys, including Allen, including Lamar Jackson, including Darnold, Rosen, Mason Rudolph, et cetera. This kid doesn't really match up with the rest of them.
No, he doesn't, and that's the thing. And that's why I said I think he's the perfect candidate to, you know, complete 61.5% of his passes as a junior, come back as a senior, you know, get up to 63-64% and show that market improvement over a 3-year span, to go from 53 to 61 to, you know, improve 10% over 2 years. You're going to be the number one pick. Like, unless Darnold goes back and you know, absolutely tears it up, like, you're the guy that's going to come out in 2019, because you're going to have a number of things. One, you're going to have the size, you're going to have the athleticism, but you're also going to have that senior year. And we know NFL teams love that. We know NFL teams.
They love experience, and they also love experience passing the ball.
Right.
Which is the thing that he does not have at this point. Now, there is a lot of football left to be played this year. And so I think that his performance against LSU is really respectable. It's a good step in that direction. And this isn't him playing like an FCS opponent. But again, a lot of what he does is predicated on his running ability. We saw that, again, over 80 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns on the ground. I'm willing to categorize this guy as a riser, okay? But if you're all of a sudden planting him in your top five as Tony Pauline did last week, you're basically saying that you're okay putting another projection in your top five, which is exactly what people did with Allen, which is blowing up in their face right now. So I caution people putting these projections. Let's wait and see when we have evidence on tape. Again, this is a player who's a junior. He doesn't have to declare. The etiquette used to be not to talk about these guys until they declared. Why are we, we're talking about him because the mainstream is starting to talk about him. Daniel Jeremiah, Tony Pauline. So we're at this point, we become obligated to do it. But I just say, hey guys, slow down because you're putting, I think, undue pressure on this. And to this point, I mean, we've been guilty of this too over the years. But again, this is the way the whole draft analysis coverage has been skewing. And I just it just feels uncomfortable to me because we're always constantly saying, like, this guy's getting hype. Oh, boom, this blew up in his face. And now we're talking about to the point where people are saying, on one end, 6 months ago, so and so is a top five pick. 6 months later, this guy's trash. And I just hate to see that for these kids because they do read the press clearly that's written about them.
Two guys that we talked about that we were keeping our eye on this weekend. One we didn't have to watch very long.
Seniors, by the way.
Seniors, yes. Pitt's Max Brown got benched. I think we can officially rule him out as
Yeah, he
our.
is now Pitt's Max Brown getting benched now 2 weeks in a row. This most recent one looks like it's at least going to result in a timeshare situation. I think we can just bow out on this. We don't have to talk about Max Brown anymore, unfortunately for Max.
And then Luke Falk came back and really answered all the questions we had and won Offensive Player of the Week in the Pac-12, which I think is a flag football competition, but I could be wrong.
Well, look, I mean, they beat Oregon State. It's not like a powerhouse, but Luke Falk came out and looked like the Luke Falk that we've seen for years at Washington State. And I always say he reminds me of a poor man's Jared Goff, which is not meant as an insult because I thought Goff was a day two guy. So I think Luke Falk's a player that can play in the NFL as a backup. But I think he still at least came out and showed that he's better than his backup and deserving to start for Washington State for the rest of the year. I actually like Luke Falk in a lot of ways. I was happy for him. I guess I was happy for him that he came out and responded to that because I think getting pulled for a series, I don't know. I mean, Mike Leach probably knows him better than anyone at this point because he's been there for 5 years. It seems odd to me that that was like the response to some early game struggles. But then what happens is the kid comes out, he responds, and he blows it up the next week and just did a fantastic job. So hats off to Luke Falk for getting Pac-12 Player of the Week. This is a guy who has just put up numbers up over numbers over numbers. So I think really the only thing that's left to prove for him is in the All-Star season. And then, of course, when he gets to the NFL Combine, it goes against that dreaded radar gun.
We had some two guys that we've hyped on this show, one by ourselves and one by one of our guests, Justin Mello. Cortland Sutton and Richie James combined for two catches for -2 yards
Oh,
against
God.
TCU in Minnesota. These are the red flags that you and I look for in games. This isn't Corey Davis where Corey Davis went and put up numbers against Wisconsin. He went and put up numbers against, Power Five teams he played against. This is why did Cortland Sutton get shut down by a guy we'll talk about in a little bit?
Right. This is shades of Kevin White from West Virginia going up against TCU and getting shut out by his namesake to Kevin White from TCU a few years ago.
That then got hyped in the draft, and I don't think he's in the NFL, is he?
Well, pretty much neither one of them are.
Yeah.
rest in peace to the Kevin Whites. Yeah, Courtland Sutton goes up again against a guy we're going to talk about in a few. We're going to tease that. But one catch, 0 yards, clearly frustrated, draws an offensive – the defender draws an offensive pass interference penalty on him late in the game. He just could not get loose. So automatically you're going to have speed concerns, which I think have been there all along. You've right. got the Nike Spark scores with him.
We've called him a glider. You know, we haven't called him a, you know, a burner or anything. He's a big body glider.
Correct. Like we've said, he's a great athlete. We know he can jump. We know he can do the box jumps. We know he can make the contested catches. He was a 4.7 guy out of high school. He's a basketball player. Is that speed? Where's that speed at right now? Because where's the speed of this corner that he's going against? And a much smaller corner. That's a concern because we've commented on Courtland Sutton's ability to make contested catches, to adjust to tough throws. He was locked up. And I think there is something to be said about the quarterback play at SMU. It's subpar. It's not what you would want. But when you have these non-Power 5 guys, you want them to dominate and you want them to play up to the competition when they play the Power 5 schools. And this, it just didn't happen with him. Richie James, I'm less surprised because James is more of a I think Justin Mello, when he was on the show, I think he kind of shied away from the Tavon Austin type of comp, and I think he wanted to go with the Tyreek Hill type of comp. I'll have to go back and listen to that show. But with Richie, you did get a couple of running plays with him, 2 carries for 25 yards, but the 1 catch for -2. Receivers are going to get shut down from time to time, even the best ones. Okay, so because sometimes they're not even going to get targeted. Sometimes they're going to get the decoy treatment, and it's going to open up things for other receivers. But in this case, you've got to look – I mean, Minnesota throttled Middle Tennessee. TCU easily handled SMU. So you've got to go in and look at these games and determine, like, how much could these players have had an impact – were they able to get free, could have made a difference. And these are players we've talked about Sutton as a potential first-round pick. Justin Mello talked about Richie James as a potential, I think, day two pick. Scouts, no doubt, are going to focus on these games. We're going to focus on these games. We're going to wonder what went wrong. Sutton goes from a 4-touchdown game against the Cupcake to a 1-catch, no-yard game, and he knows that he's got to rebound strong for the rest of the year. It's no different from any other position. These guys know their production counts, and they know their opponent counts. And even though we are scouting traits, and we are, I mean, for our listeners out there that preach traits over stats and traits over times, we understand that. But still, you've got to look at these games. You've got to look at him closely and see what went wrong.
Anthony Miller, on the other end, jumped out this weekend. He's a guy that put up massive numbers as a true junior at Memphis last year. 95 catches, 1,434 yards, 14 touchdowns. Started off a little slower this year in his first game. Just 2 catches for 23 yards in Memphis's route over Louisiana Monroe. But in the big game against UCLA, against a Power 5 opponent, he did the opposite of Sutton and James, and he kind of put on a show. And Miller put up 9 catches for 185 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's obviously a guy that can produce. He's also smaller, not super small, but 5'11", 190. NFL draft scout has his low end 40 at 4.43. You know, his projected 40 time is in the low 4.5s. Unless he runs, you know, much faster, he's going to come out as kind of just a guy. But he's putting up monster numbers. And we've seen guys, albeit slightly bigger, come out and be able to produce in the NFL.
I want to look at him. I want to see if he's – is he Taywan Taylor? Is he one of these other players that came out of a non-Power 5 conference? Maybe these guys are a little bit slow developing. I haven't given much time to Miller at this point, but he put himself on the radar on Saturday against UCLA because he was probably the most impressive player on either team in terms of like what he did right versus what he didn't do right. There wasn't much he didn't do right. He was the guy out there making the plays regardless. He was outshining. I mean, even though his quarterback, Riley Ferguson, in some ways outshined Josh Rosen, Miller was the guy outshining Ferguson. He's put himself firmly on the radar. And I know there are people, in particular, the Dynasty League fantasy football people, the Devy League draft people who have been talking about Anthony Miller. So it's not like this is a complete unknown. This guy has been talked about out there. It's nice to see a player like that come out and shine and just like completely shine through everyone else on the field that day. I thought that's what he did. There were a lot of players of interest in that UCLA-Memphis game, and this guy made himself the spotlight.
Some notable defensive players this weekend. Arden Key made his debut. Not a ton of run in the game, and obviously LSU got ran over by Nick Fitzgerald and company, but half a sack. He had a hurry. Good enough for a debut, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, you want a little bit more out of the guy who's being touted as a top two pick. But when you put all the puzzle pieces together, a player who left the program, a player who had shoulder surgery, I think that was emotional for him. And he comes in and at least puts something on the board in that first game in a tough loss for his team. In some ways, you've got to look at it as a positive. It's kind of a nothing right now for a guy who had 12 sacks last year and set the record for the school. But it's something for a guy who's coming off the shoulder injuries, coming off the personal issues. So it's a building block, and I think that's how you have to look at it. I think we should talk about since we're going with defense, let's talk about two other defensive guys first, and then we'll get to the one offensive guy that we want to spotlight. So Malik Jefferson, Texas, linebacker. I think some people said he was kind of trending downward as a junior after the first game. And now I think he's building some momentum, right? He had 9 solo tackles, 2 tackles for loss versus USC, and helped drive that game into overtime where Sam Darnold pulls out the win. But Malik Jefferson hadn't really done much the first couple of years to justify that 5-star recruit ranking, but you could see the athleticism on the field. This kid has a lot of talent. Seth, you and I have been notoriously tough on highly touted linebackers. There's no doubt. And we will be on this guy too, but I think this is a nice fresh rebound for a player in a big game in the Tom Herman era. I think this is he's getting his juice back.
Definitely. And, Jefferson, like you said, in a big game, but also against guys on the USC offensive line who are going to get a look in the NFL. They don't have the, Matt Khalil type prospect, even though we all know Matt Khalil's trash in the NFL. Apparently.
No, but you're totally right, man. I mean, the people respect the USC program. So when defenders play well against that USC offense, they're going to get some additional respect. It's at least going to raise some eyebrows.
And so, it's good to see Jefferson come on the board and really light it up a little bit. The next guy we're going to talk about a little bit is Re'Anthony, and I know it's Tejada, but we're going to go with Texada just because.
Just so you can drink for the, if you're playing the Seth mispronounces a name drinking game, Ranthony Texada.
Yes, Ranthony Texada, the cornerback out of TCU, shut down Courtland Sutton, and now he gets another test of, quote unquote, wide receiver one coming up this week as TCU takes on Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I love this. I love this,
This
man.
is going to be two huge, huge chances for him.
This kid is like we I alluded to the Kevin White matchup when Kevin White, West Virginia receiver, big Kevin White, went up against little Kevin White for TCU. So Tejada, Ranthony Tejada, is a little guy. He's like 5'10", 180. I think the estimated speed is about 4.47, maybe 4.5. So he doesn't have great pass breakup and interception stats. I think the pick that he had last week was his third career or second career, and I think he had 2 years where he had seven pass breakups. But it's not like he is this crazy ball hawk. But he really did a fantastic job last week against Courtland Sutton. So this is a player who he's a senior, and we've got to put him on that map right now. I don't think at his size he's gonna garner a ton of hype, but now he's at least on track to get an all-star game invite, maybe a Shrine game, and then maybe get a call up from there. So this is cool when a player like this puts himself. He had a matchup that was primo to him, and to the other guy, to Sutton, it probably wasn't as big of a deal as he thought it was going to be. And then Tejada goes out there and gets the better of him. And I think that's a big deal when it comes to scouting. It's going to make people take notice.
It will. And another guy that had a really, nice game. And he's a guy that's not really on a ton of people's radar because he's a 6'1", 220-pound linebacker, and that's Dorian O'Daniel out of Clemson.
Right.
And but we've seen guys like Telvin Smith. We've seen, obviously, he's not going to be on the same level as a prospect as a Deion Buchanan, but we've seen even like a Sua Cravens. We've seen guys go in the fourth and fifth round, and the NFL finds a way to use them and use them well and make them productive NFL players. Now, that's not to say that this will be that's who O'Daniel can be, but you can't just disqualify him because he is 6'1", 220, especially if he comes out and shows some good athleticism.
Yeah, Dorian O'Daniel's coming out flying around for the Clemson defense. And we've talked about Clemson defense probably a couple shows in a row now, and we haven't mentioned him. And here he comes out, he's flying around, he's making tackles. He gets that pick six against Lamar Jackson, who we've talked about as a Heisman favorite. So this is another big performance by a player who's not being highly touted, like you said. So I'm excited about when guys like Tejada and Dorian O'Daniel have big weeks against tough opponents. And it makes this fun. It makes this fun and interesting to watch. I know Seth and I talk about quarterbacks a ton on this show because quarterbacks are what people are watching during the college football season. A lot of the draft analysis shifts away from quarterbacks after the season because so much of it's on quarterbacks in the season, but we wanted to recognize a couple of under-the-radar defenders this week in Tejada and O'Daniel, who just had fantastic weeks against perceived tough opponents. I think they showed up well, and they put themselves in the mix for late round to undrafted free agency consideration. We see guys like that succeed every single year.
Exactly. And maybe the biggest gainer, and we've talked about him a couple times, but this was the first time he's played a defense, kind of worth a lick this season, having played and ran over and through the Arizona State defense, and that's Rashad Penny out of San Diego State. We talked about this before the season started and talked about Penny perhaps, he was a 1,000-yard runner last year, despite Donald Pumphrey, being the workhorse.
And I might add, Penny was the Mountain West Conference Special Teams Player of the Year.
And so, you know, in his first game against California Davis, again, nothing, 197 yards, 9.4 yards per carry against an even worse defense in Arizona State. He ran for 18 times for 216 yards.
Wait, did you say Arizona State's worse than Cal State Davis?
Defensively, clear. Did you not see what they did against Texas Tech last week?
I just wanted to clarify that. I just wanted. I know you're familiar, but wow.
So Penny against Arizona State ran the ball 18 times for 216 yards, 12 yards per carry, and a touchdown. Just one lonely rushing touchdown. But he also had four catches for 38 yards and a touchdown. Oh, and he had one kick return for 99 yards and a touchdown in that game. So Rashad Penny scored three touchdowns against Arizona State in their, I believe he outscored Arizona State. Yeah, he outscored Arizona State. Well, technically not, because he didn't kick the extra points. But in San Diego State's 30-20 win over Arizona State, Rashad Penny scored as many touchdowns as the entire Arizona State team. So this guy, he's a freak. And then this week against, you know, a very talented Stanford team, a very stout Stanford team, 32 carries. So a giant, you know, workload for 175 yards and a touchdown, five more catches. This is a guy that, I mean, we're hyping Kalen Ballage, but are we overlooking a guy that could be, you know, the 2018 version of Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, I think this is a great point, because Penny's a big guy too. And look what he's done. He's versatile, returning kicks, catching passes, running. He's played in a tandem backfield. Now he's the guy. He's dominating. He's playing well. This is what we've been talking about the whole show. A guy from the Mountain West Conference coming in and being the man against a Pac-12 team, against a respected Pac-12 team, a guy who's going to drive David Shaw right into NFL coaching, probably, a guy who looked like the better running back than that more hyped Kalen Ballage last week. So we'll talk about Ballage again in a second, but Penny deserves respect, and I think he's getting it right now. Now we are hearing about early in the week a potential day two pick. So this Kareem Hunt parallel, I don't know enough about Penny to compare them stylistically at this point. I was very well versed in Kareem Hunt. I had seen him many, many times by this time last year when he was at Toledo. Penny, not quite as many times, but I have seen him enough to know that the guy is legit. And I think it's safe to say that he's at least the top senior running back in the class at this point. And now he's going to be compared. He's going to start to be compared with the highly touted juniors like Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis. I don't think he's in that same category.
Well, I mean, Saquon Barkley,
I mean, it's kind of like Kareem Hunt last year, you know, with Fournette and Cook. Most people acknowledge that Kareem Hunt was probably the
and McCaffrey. I mean, I know right. We're all burying McCaffrey already as a pro, but
well, I think I already liked Hunt over McCaffrey, but whatever.
But you know, the thing you have to remember is when you have a guy like Saquon Barkley who's better in every facet of the game than Ezekiel Elliott.
Shut up.
I guess that'll
kick off Daniel Jeremiah's sources, by the way. But
I guess that kicks off our.
You should have saved that for the hot takes, man.
Well, that kicks off our hot take segment, and it starts with anonymous executive sources after Zeke's worst game as a pro.
All of a sudden, the anonymous sources creep out of the woodwork like cockroaches, man.
And talk
Zeke
about
Zeke runs nine times for eight yards against a tough defense, and all of a sudden, here come the anonymous sources creeping out, and they're like, this college kid's better.
In every facet of the game, or whatever the quote was, and it's just
it's not like Ezekiel Elliott was fourth overall pick and one of the best rookie rushers of all time. It's just But all of a sudden, here they come creeping out. And don't get me wrong, I'm not disputing this. I haven't done enough work on running backs this year to make that judgment, but I kind of think you're saying, like, all right, Saquon Barkley's a top five pick and a potential 1,800 yard rusher as a rookie, right?
Right, exactly. Couple more hot takes. We'll stick with the running backs for right now. Buddy Justin Mello, who we had on the show to start the year to look at the non-Power 5 and some of the smaller school prospects, had an interesting write-up for DraftWire, Luke Easterling's website, with the USA Today wire sites. And the title of it is enough to be the hot take. It's a good article. I recommend reading it and getting, you know, the overall take of it, but we're definitely using that title, because if you're going to put a title out like this, you know you're demanding clicks and hot take reactions. And
so let me say this: read Justin's interview, because he does good work and he doesn't write the title. But Seth, give us the title, because this is, like you said, this is the hot take.
It is Kalen Ballage ready to become the next Le'Veon Bell.
Come on, man. Is that what it says?
So the whole thing is this, right? Ballage has struggled at Arizona State, where everybody's struggled this year. He's, you know, I don't want to say he's coasting off one big game, but, you know, the Texas Tech game is still –
the Texas Tech game of 2016.
Yeah, it's still clearly his bread and butter. And
he's so good in the Wildcat that game.
He's, you know, against Texas Tech this year, he ran 16 times for 56 yards. He had one catch for 8 yards. His yards per carry average is down under 4.
3.7 for the season.
So
three games
since 15,
and 4.4 for his career. For his career, this isn't like an anomaly at this point.
Well, and you look at his career numbers, and his career usage rate is what you would expect from a top kind of flight running back, right? Like 340 carries, 1,500 yards, 25 touchdowns.
From a top flight running back who's a sophomore, he's a senior.
In one season is what I'm saying.
Right.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like,
Le'Veon Bell carried more than that in a season, right?
And so this is the danger of comparisons, because, you know, we talked about it at the beginning of this show with Josh Allen and unwarranted expectations. And now you're putting maybe the best running back in the NFL, Le'Veon Bell, on a guy that's – he's never carried the load. You know, as a junior, Bell carried 382 times for just under 1,800 yards. So you look at him, it doesn't necessarily line up overall. It is a really good article. It's a good review. And I do feel bad for Ballage, because he's an athlete that hasn't been able to be an athlete because he's on a very poorly coached and run ASU team that
sound like Pete Prisco. Well,
no, I'm not that jaded, but still, you know, so you look at it overall and it's definitely frustrating for him, but it's going to be frustrating for evaluators to decide what to make of this kid.
Honestly, I want to say this too, because I am laughing, I'm deriding right now, but I think there is something to it when people are talking about this kid's talent versus his numbers. And I am usually a person who likes to focus on usage and college dominance, and I think that we've established that we expect that Kalen Ballage is going to test really, really well as an athlete. So he is going to be a tough evaluation. He's going to be a very tough evaluation. I hope that he gets significant play and significant run in all-star games because that's going to help him. I think it's ridiculous that this guy keeps sharing backfield carries with a player who's seemingly less talented than him.
Hey, DeMario Richard is a fantastic fullback prospect.
I think DeMario Richard is like a decent college runner, but I don't think in terms of talent, he doesn't hold a candle to Kalen Ballage in terms of athletic talent, okay?
That's why I said he's a fullback prospect. Like, right. He's not
a tiny one.
Yeah.
And also, I joked that Ballage is getting run out of the Wildcat so much, and so many of his successful, especially goal line and red zone runs, are out of the Wildcat. And I think you can look at Kalen Ballage's junior year, and you can see that he's a terrific receiver. So it's so frustrating the way my takes on Ballage are more frustration with how Arizona State uses him than anything. But I still am hesitant to say that this guy's going to be a star a la Le'Veon Bell when he seemingly doesn't have the trust of his own coaching staff to be that go-to guy. That there's just such a disconnect here. I feel like he's such a risky prospect. I would almost want my hands clean of him and let somebody else deal with this conundrum, because I just cannot figure this out. Like, what is the problem here? Why isn't this guy getting the bulk of the carries? Why isn't this guy? I think there is an issue that he's not a natural running back. And when you look at, for example, a guy like Kareem Hunt, who's not the most physically gifted guy, who's not the fastest guy, doesn't have great shuttles. Dalvin Cook is another one, has a good 40, but doesn't have good shuttles. And people really harped on that stuff. And it looks like early on in both their careers, they're fantastic runners. Here, Kalen Ballage is probably going to be the opposite of that, where he has a great 40 time, has great shuttles, but never showed that he was a great running back. And that is troubling to me.
The last hot take before we kind of run through previews real quick. Greg Gabriel, former director of scouting for the Chicago Bears.
My guy. I love Greg Gabriel.
Yeah, you guys just relate to being old and grumpy.
I've met Greg too, and I just think he's got the juice, man.
So talk to a scouting director today. He, like me, has Mason Rudolph way up there. Add to his physical gifts, the intangibles are outstanding. And then he follows that tweet up by saying, the scouting director and me also agree that Josh Allen isn't close to the hype. But this is the kicker. Same with Rosen.
The Rosen coaster.
So he took, I mean, he just kind of took a flamethrower to a lot of draft Twitter's ideas on this quarterback class, taking swipes at Josh Allen and Josh Rosen and propping up Mason Rudolph, who, let's be fair, is a senior. And we've talked about the love of the NFL and seniors.
And Gabriel's old school. He's all about seniors. I mean, he liked Carson Wentz. He liked I think he liked Connor Cook. He liked I can't
Kevin Hogan. Quite, he loved Kevin Hogan.
He did love Kevin Hogan, who who played the other day better than Deshaun Kaiser.
We're not going to talk about it.
That hurt. That hurt.
So, yeah, I mean, overall, I think this is just when Gabriel says, I talk to somebody, and I don't mean this as a slam against anybody else. I really don't. So, you know, Matt Miller, I mean, he's the only one that really talks to us. But like, Matt, I don't mean this as a slam against you. But like when Greg says, I talk to a scouting director, I listen. Like, yeah. And I'm not trying to be a dick about that.
Yeah, but no, I get what you're saying too. I think Matt talks to
a lot of scouts.
Scouting people, and I think Eric Galco does too, from Optimum Scouting. I think Daniel Jeremiah probably does. But a lot of times those guys are talking to scouts.
Right. Not
and when Gabriel says scouting director, I think that is worth a listen, right?
Yeah. So when he says that, yeah, you're just going, okay, maybe we should file this away in the back of our head about Mason Rudolph. Maybe we need to go back and see what we're missing. Because you and I have said, like, Rudolph kind of gives us, like, that Glennon, Osweiler vibe. But the NFL love them. So, I mean, both those guys are going to make more money than in 1 year than you and I can dream of in a lifetime. So, I mean, what do we know?
Are we that crazy to think – I mean, look at what Gabriel's saying. He's saying that they're higher on Mason Rudolph than we think. And he's also saying he's saying things about intangibles and things like that. So we talked about Tony Pauline said that what he was hearing was that Rudolph was a day three guy. We also saw that in Albert Breer Monday Morning Quarterback article that Rudolph was a day three guy. What Gabriel says doesn't say, hey, Mason Rudolph's a top 10 guy. He's saying he's going higher than you think. And if we're thinking fourth, fifth round, and what we've said was we thought he was more like second, third round, well, that doesn't seem far-fetched at all to us. The thing that seems weird is when he says that they like Rudolph better than Rosen. So that brings up the point that people have been saying that scouts have a problem with Rosen's attitude. Because I will say this, Rosen to me looks like the most natural as far as quarterback. He just looks like a natural out there. But he keeps digging himself and his team holes and then trying to dig himself and his team out of those holes. To a point, he does well. Against Texas A&M, he was fortunate with a couple of dropped interceptions where he took advantage and brought his team back from to victory. Against Memphis, Rosen wasn't able to overcome a couple of bad picks. He still had great numbers, but in some ways he was outplayed by Riley Ferguson. If you're talking about, like, I think Gabriel's talking to these draft, these personnel people, and they're saying, like, Rudolph is a guy who's a four-year leader. He's a player who came back this year to play as a senior, and we saw that he and his receiver, James Washington, announced that together. There's some leadership there. There are a lot of scouts on Twitter, and I'm not disputing them necessarily, but what they're saying is, like, that Mason Rudolph has a lot of easy throws. The system makes it easier for him. I guess I have a question about that, and because I'm no coach, but what is it that makes it easier? What is it that makes it easier? Because what makes the offense so complex, unless you're giving a quarterback a ton of audible options and you're giving receivers a lot of option routes and things like that? What is it that makes it so complex that what Mason Rudolph's doing right now doesn't translate? My biggest problem with Rudolph is the arm strength and the deep ball. The deep ball hangs a lot. We've talked about that. I still think Rudolph deals. Like, he's got a smooth delivery. He's got the quick release. He knows where he's going with the football. There's a lot to like about him, and I don't have a problem with penciling him in that second and third round range. So, you know, I think this is more from Gabriel. I think this is more of an indictment on the other quarterbacks in the class than really like hyping Mason Rudolph. Do you get that?
Oh yeah, I understand. I understand that. When you look at this weekend's games, we're not in the meat of the schedule. There's some intriguing games. I think the first one we need to talk about,
Ohio State versus
UNLV. Yeah.
Yeah. wanted to give the drinking game people
one more shot.
Yeah.
I think the Kent State Louisville game, what does Lamar Jackson look like? How does he respond? It wasn't like he had a terrible game.
He had a terrible half.
Right. It wasn't what you expected. And it was what we talked about. It wasn't exactly what you wanted to see from the kid. And so maybe that's not fair to him, but it is what it is. Like, you
He's going from facing one of the toughest defenses in college football to facing Kent State, and he should feast on Kent State this
Right.
week. So I think what you're saying is, like, does this guy have, is he still depressed?
Yeah.
Like, is he having like a situational depression, or is he just going to go out and just destroy Kent State? I think he's going to destroy Kent State.
I agree. Alabama versus Vanderbilt, not for any other reason, but we're going to see the nation's sack leader, Charles Wright, a redshirt junior out of Vanderbilt, going up against this Alabama offensive line. Jonah Williams is the starting left tackle at Bama. He'll be a prospect next year. He's a true sophomore. When we're done with the day on Saturday, Wright's got 6.5 sacks through 3 games. If he adds to that total, are we going to start to perk up about him as a prospect? Or will this be the case of, all right, now he's going to face an NFL talent and all right, well, good night. This whole thing's over.
Oh, I think we should start talking about him. I mean, Vanderbilt, say what you want, but it's an SEC team. It's a Power Five team, and they're going to face tough opponents. Yeah, this is a big game for a guy like that. He wasn't really necessarily on the radar for me. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but he wasn't on the radar for me. So, yeah, I think this is exactly the type of matchup that a player like him needs. But again, coming from Vanderbilt, does a redshirt junior declare? We don't usually see that. Usually we see the guys come back and play out their full college career at schools like Vanderbilt, schools like Northwestern, schools like Minnesota, and schools like that are coming from the Power Five conferences, but they're on the lower end of the standings. But this is cool. This is very cool. Like, I didn't, before the show, when Seth was telling me this fact, I did not know this. So now all of a sudden I have interest in a game like Alabama versus Vanderbilt.
Then we have the, only top 25 matchup of the day. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, but TCU and Oklahoma State.
My guy Tejada is
Yeah.
going up against James Washington.
Texada versus James Washington.
Texada, so you guys can drink.
Texada versus James Washington.
And we got Mason Rudolph.
And more Mason Rudolph. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be kind of it's one of those games where I think you can get a lot out of three prospects at least here.
And I think we should say, like, I guess we should pay attention to Kenny Hill, right?
Oh, the TCU quarterback. Yeah, I mean he's
Yeah, I
playing
mean, he's a senior,
extremely,
right?
and
Kenny,
he's.
the Thrill Hill or whatever. Like, he gave himself a nickname at Texas A&M and then he transferred, and now he's putting up big, big numbers early on. They've also got the running back Kyle Hicks, and they've got another, I think, redshirt sophomore running back whose name's escaping me, but there are some prospects to watch in this game, but the guys I'm watching are Rudolph, Washington, Tejada.
Yeah, Hill's numbers are video games. 70 or 737 yards, 75% completion percentage, 8 touchdowns,
Stunned.
only 2 interceptions. But 6'1", 200 pounds, spread quarterback. So we'll definitely
I
hear.
can't wait to argue about that guy in January.
So yeah, I mean, there's one of your Senior Bowl quarterbacks at this point, right?
Probably. I mean, we've got two Senior Bowl quarterbacks in this game, I guess, because you've
Right.
got Rudolph and you've got Hill. And again, I don't want to harp on Rudolph, but he's just been like, I remember in our previews, I said this, that I didn't think there was going to be a pass first, no run quarterback really contend for Heisman. I think at this point, if there was going to be, it would be Mason Rudolph because of the numbers they posted early on this season so far. Because it's not going to be Josh Rosen. It's not going to be Sam Darnold. Those guys have had really bad moments. I think Lamar Jackson still has a chance to rebound and become a Heisman hopeful. I don't think JT Barrett can do it because of his performance against Oklahoma. Baker Mayfield might be able to do it, but he's still like, to me, he's still more of like a mobile.
Yeah, not a pocket passer.
Right, right, right. So if there's going to be a guy that's going to do it, it's going to be Mason Rudolph. I still don't think that's what's going to happen, but if there is a guy that's going to do it, Rudolph's the guy in the driver's seat right now.
And I lied. There's one other meeting between top 25 teams, and I can't believe I forgot this because you and I talked about it before the show, but more Nick Fitzgerald is the number 17 ranked Mississippi State Bulldogs take on the 11th ranked Georgia Bulldogs in the Battle of the Bulldogs. I'm excited to watch this game because I'm excited to see what Fitzgerald can do and if he can carry over a really impressive performance after, you know, after a performance where he kind of put it on a good LSU defense. And then
Georgia, to that point, Seth, they gave up over 200 rushing yards to Notre Dame's quarterback Brandon Wimbush last week.
Yes.
And so this is a game where Fitzgerald can completely feast. But we've also got that great Georgia backfield, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, to focus on too.
And they're running out a freshman quarterback still. Jacob Eason's been hurt. And they've been running out Jake Fromm.
Yeah, and Eason's maybe going to get back into it. Probably not. We're still going to probably see Fromm. So they've got that dynamic duo in the backfield, plus the backups who are all highly recruited, like Evander Holyfield's son, Elijah. But here's Nick Fitzgerald. He's got to have – like his mouth's got to be watering watching the fact that Wimbush, who doesn't even pass as well as he does, went out and ran for 200 yards last week. I think this is a place where Fitzgerald can continue to grow his legend. But I really want to see that Georgia backfield thrive too, because I think I'm starting to see when I look at Chubb – I mean, Michelle has been solid throughout his career. Chubb seems to be getting back to where he was.
Yeah, that special player.
Yeah, he's not there yet, but he's at least looking like a solid NFL back.
Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I'm excited about this weekend. I hope that I'm able to, you know, to check in like later in the afternoon. Unfortunately, I got some family business to attend to early in the day, but I'm going to be recording some games. I'm going to be following all these quarterbacks closely, and I think Seth and I will probably get together and watch some NFL football this weekend. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week with some more takes. And it'll be our last show before I have a guest on. Hopefully Deontay Lee and I can schedule something so we can get the Lamar Jackson hive going again, since it kind of hit a snag in the road, so to speak. So, but thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back next week. Check us out on SoundCloud. Check us out on iTunes. We're part of Blog Talk Radio and Stitcher Radio. So make sure you, anywhere you can download a podcast, download the Draft Breakdown podcast, give us a 5-star review and, you know, let us know what you think. We appreciate it as always. And we'll be back next week. Have a great night, everybody.